Good afternoon, California Market Bakery.
Hello, Kathy.
Hey, Jeremy, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine. Have you recovered from your illness?
I still have a little bit left, but it's starting to dissipate.
Yeah, bummer. Summer colds.
Oh, no, it's not real. It's everybody seems to have it here in New York for some reason.
Well, good. Well, you just keep it in New York.
So, you're on Stir the Pots.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
well, you know, I certainly enjoyed listening to the interviews. You know, it keeps me entertained, you know, when you're living out in the middle of nowhere.
Where did you start baking?
I probably started baking my early 20s. Probably my first baking job was at the Inn Kensington, which is a small village community right, you know, kind of within Berkeley or right on the outskirts of Berkeley. You know, I more of the French style, you know, fancy pastries and wedding cakes. You know, it was quite a good experience. I was, you know, needing work, and it wasn't really what I went to university for, but for some reason it took, and you know, it just seems this is what I do, so I kept doing it.
And you worked at Acme Bakery as well?
Yeah, after the Inn Kensington, Acme was, I think they'd been open 3 months then, and, you know, I needed to move on and do something else, and I had started baking a little bit of bread for the Inn because they had started serving dinners, and walked in the door at Acme, and fortunately enough, they were looking for people because they were growing so fast at the time, and spent the next 5 years, you know, working for Acme until I moved out of the area.
And then you went to Sierra Nevada?
Yeah, a few years later, I moved to Chico, and up, you know, it's a smaller town, it's an ag town, and they certainly didn't pay bakers as well as we were paid in Berkeley.
Yeah.
So I stopped baking for a while, and Sierra Nevada had just expanded, and then we're in the process probably another 6-7 years later of, you know, a major expansion where they were redoing the kitchen, and they put in $1.5 million renovation of the pub, which was, you know, beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, stayed there for probably a year and a half, and then we were took another job and then off to Ireland. And haven't been back since. So, but yeah, it's been, you know, quite an adventure, you know, in and out of baking. And now I've just kind of decided this is what I do and should stay with this because, you know, usually they say stick with what you know and what you enjoy.
Sure. And can you describe a little bit what you make at your bakery?
What we've, you know, started off with because it was cheaper than anything else is, and they also didn't have any here really, were muffins. Muffins, you know, we've kind of been pigeonholed to do these muffins, and the muffins available when we came over were kind of the ones you find in the airport in the little cellophane wrappers that last for about 8 weeks. And so it's been kind of fun introducing them to what a real muffin is, and that, you know, they do taste a little better than what you find in the airports. And so then we also do probably like the California-style scone. They're very different than what the Irish scones would be.
Right.
And we, you know, expanded into granola, dog biscuits. You know, we're doing apple tarts now. You know, we've expanded the bakery from 420 square feet. We're actually in a 2,800 square foot area now, even though the bakery's only about 1,500 square feet. The rest is storage and office space. And we're hoping to start doing some breads shortly, but I'm kind of short of bakers and time and you know, still looking for a few pieces of equipment. Being in Northern Ireland, we're a little bit behind the rest of the world. And, you know, even though we are part of the United Kingdom, sourcing ingredients and equipment has been kind of difficult. And finally, you know, through like Dan Lepard's forum, I finally got a contact for some peels over in France, and the guy spoke English, so they're on their way. So little bit by bit, we're getting into where we're doing more and more products. So kind of exciting.
We were talking about this a little bit through the email. Do you think Ireland itself has progressed a lot more than Northern Ireland, or are you guys still a few steps behind, or...?
We're more than a few steps behind, unfortunately. You know, things are changing really rapidly here, you know, with the political situations changed, you know, remarkably. So I've been here, I'm on my 7th year here, so it has been fascinating to watch as, you know, the political climate has changed. Things are starting to change rather fast. All our business is in Dublin, Northern Ireland hasn't quite embraced this as well as the Republic has. Yeah. And so food-wise, the Republic of Ireland is, you know, probably a good 10 to 20 years ahead of Northern Ireland.
Hmm. And that's probably due to the troubles they had.
You know, it's really hard to say. The Northern Irish are a little stuck in their ways,
yeah.
And change does not obviously come quickly or easily to them, where I think the Republic of Ireland, you know, embraced the European Union. They, you know, a remarkable story there in the last 20 years, how fast they grew. A lot of Americans in the Dublin area. So they have a pretty strong influence, you know, when they're wanting something from home, you know, they either bring it, you know, and start producing it themselves, or they certainly support, you know, like us, we have a lot of American customers,
right.
And they were so happy to see us. So that's always, you know, nice.
And there's always been a lot of Irish people that, have lived here for many years and then end up going there, but still have like a bit of the American taste in them.
Yeah, I think there is a strong, you know, American influence, and that's, you know, pretty much in the Dublin area. You won't necessarily find that, you know, in Cork or,
right.
You know, in the boglands or the, you know, what they call the Midlands of Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all, everything here is kind of community, you know, people's accents change from community to community, village to village,
yeah.
County to county. So, you know, you leave Dublin and you will have a whole different feel different, you know, we may not do as well, say, in the middle of Ireland as, say, we do in the Dublin area,
uh-huh.
You know, just like we don't do, you know, we have our customers, but we don't do as well as,
yeah.
Say, in the Dublin area.
Do you think you have to kind of conform to what they want, or do you think you're going to teach them what it is that you're trying to get across to them?
Well, probably being an American, I don't conform too easily, and in a way it has. You know, I am kind of baking around more of an educational, I guess, philosophy that, you know, things can be better, and here, let me show you kind of idea. You know, there are things out there, but they're still, you know, not at a level, at, you know, as they could be. Like, you know, croissants taste so much better when they're made with butter and not margarine.
Yeah.
And that is kind of, you know, where things are here, you know, that fresh ingredients, you know, do make a difference. Vanilla extract was like, you know, I don't even think a supplier even still carries it here. So I get it over from England, you know, it took, you know, probably a year till I finally found someone who would sell it to me, you know, from in England. And I have to buy, you know, 20 liters at a time, which, you know, I had to mortgage the house for. So those kind of things are evolving and starting to happen, but it's, you know, I
small
think it's
steps.
In progress right now of what food and what you can do with it and expanding, you know, outside what they have. More and more things are being grown here, even though they're under what they call polytunnels. And, you know, they're trying to do the seasonal thing, but we know we have some weather issues here that, you know, make it a little harder than we had it in California as far as, you know, baking or cooking in season and the ingredients we have to use.
And how's that transition changed the way you bake? From that beautiful California climate.
I'm not baking in season, unfortunately. You know, I wish I could, but I do stick with things that do, you know, do well, like berries, and berries grow here really well. We have this great blueberry farm down in Port Arlington, Dairy Villa Farms. And John Seeger's the farmer down there, and he is like the blueberry expert, not only in Ireland, I think in a good part of the world. And he has 20 acres of blueberries that we just go through, you know, millions of. And they freeze well, you know, so they carry over better than, say, like strawberries, which grow well here. But those are something I would stick in season because they don't freeze as well as, say, the blackberries and raspberries and blueberries,
sure.
Which we can get here. I do use cranberries, you know, from Northern America, but not truly baking in season like you would be able to in California because you would have such a selection,
yeah.
Of things, and the seasons change so quickly that, you know, even though you may only be using nuts and dried fruits at a certain time, you know, something's coming down the road soon, where here that doesn't really happen.
Well, how's the competition adjusted to your making California style muffins and things?
Well, I thought somebody would start making muffins similar to ours by now, because we're in our 5th year with the bakery, and I'm surprised that we still haven't really seen anyone trying to copy us. And it could be because no one's that crazy to spend probably the amount of money that we do spend on ingredients. And then also the hours that I bake is kind of uncommon over here. A lot of bakery products you would find were baked the day before, and
Yeah.
they sit out on the shelves, for a few days. And that's kind of our disadvantage, because some of the stores that do want our stuff want them to last quite a while, and we don't do that. So I think other people, because they have to make a living, or maybe they just don't see, it's not noticed so much. So really, why do we go to the trouble if no one really cares,
So you're the
kind of.
crazy American then.
Yeah, people see me on Sundays. I'm pretty burnt, because I do stay up all night, and then I actually go down on the markets in Dublin on Sunday.
Yeah.
And my week's pretty long. And then just trying to source things, and because bakers, who bake this way or have a passion for baking are kind of few and far between here. Or they're there and I can't find them. There's not as strong a network here between food communities to kind of dig these people up. I know they're there, but it's a lot of work just to find them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the competition-wise, there isn't really anything out there. Northern Ireland is still baking, traditional soda breads, sausage rolls, cream buns are big. Down south, people do keep making an attempt, but you don't really see it yet. I think it's coming, but it just hasn't arrived here yet.
Yeah, so you're on you're right on the crest of the wave. You can just dive in and.
Yeah, well, there is just there's for all those bakers out there is incredible opportunity here for the food scene. It's where it maybe it was in England, a decade ago, or in California, decades ago. And bread especially is new here. That's probably the hard part of finding equipment. No one's really baking hearth style breads. So there's an appeal to be found on the island, and even a deck oven I had to get from France, and the suppliers, I had to get it myself. The suppliers had no idea why you would want such a thing.
Just talked to this baker in France that I know, and he learned how to bake bread in England, but he's originally from France, and now he's like down in Nice, and he was telling me we were talking about how bread has changed in France, and that a lot of people are using improvers and just a lot of chemicals and not really going back to the old traditional style. And he said he finds that there's more older bakers making the crappy bread, and the younger guys saying, "Hey, go back to the tradition." So there's this focus of younger people saying, "Hey, you had better things back in the old days. Why are you following this new bad style of bread baking?"
Yeah, it's interesting, because I know the suppliers I deal with, they pretty much don't work too hard with me, because most of the stuff they are carrying, they really are pushing, say, like muffin mixes, which,
Yeah.
if you're a baker, for God's sake, make the muffin yourself. Why
Yeah.
are you just adding water? That doesn't make any sense for me. Those things are designed for maybe small little cafes, and they want to bake a few things, and they don't really have a baker. But the bakeries that are using the mixes, the improvers, I found out that there's such a thing as sourdough flavoring. I had no
Oh,
idea.
yeah.
But people are really saying, well, this baker uses this, why don't you use it? And I don't really understand it, but I think it's just a philosophy. And I'm sure, like a lot of things cycle back around, and the craft bread industry will probably come back to France. And I think a lot of people say too, once you leave Paris, they're harder to find, and so, and for a lot of reasons, things may be, flour's hard to come by here in Ireland, so maybe people think, well, this is the key, but it really isn't, because you could really see a difference in bread. It doesn't grill up or toast well. It like disintegrates into dust. So you see different things happening, but I'm sure it'll all cycle around again. People
When
go back to the original, better breads.
I was in Wales, we had gotten this really great bread with Dan Lepard and all these bakers baking at a rugby hall, and there was this great flour from this mill in just south, just on the border with England and Wales, and really wonderful flour, and I'd never use this stuff. And each flour that I've gone to in different countries is so different, and you know, you just have to learn how to use. And this baker I talked to today, he was just saying how in France it's different, how bakers really understand their flour a lot better than he did when he was working in England. And there's a whole different mindset in different countries of how to bake. And I was wondering about that, about Ireland, why, you know, yeasted breads weren't such a, or sourdough breads aren't a typical staple in their diet. And I think, and I noticed like in Wales, they were using like naked barley, and their traditional breads were made out of like grains, like barley and the cheaper stuff that could actually grow in that sort of weather, you know, that they have on that side of the coast.
Yeah, sure. The things, you know, I'm sure, especially with Ireland, not that long ago, and even in Northern Ireland, it was only, you know, a few years, pretty poor countries, you know, even though you would think, you know, especially Northern Ireland being part of the United Kingdom would, you know, it's a superpower, but we actually, you know, don't have a lot of things here, and the things that are available to, especially in the Republic of Ireland, which not that long ago was a, you know, like a third world country.
Sure.
And I think what becomes available for them, what they can get, the cost, people are really cash conscious here. And so things that cost a little more money, they don't understand, because it's like, well, it's good enough, you know, this is good enough. And they usually look at what's cheaper. Like all our muffins are the same price, even though some ingredients may cost more. So I don't have people, but so they'll try them all instead of saying, oh, well, I'll take the cheapest one.
Yeah.
So they'll at least explore other things that were really foreign to them when they saw them.
Yeah.
But as far as yeasted breads go, I think weather also plays a really big part of it. You know, I probably bake because I really like warm weather. And, you know, I always enjoy that the bakery is like 80 degrees all year round. But over here, I've actually had long underwear on in my bakery. I'm like, well, I can't even believe that this is happening. And when we first moved in here, I had 3 heaters in the bakery just trying to get the place to warm up.
Wow.
Of course, that's before I had the big oven come in.
Yeah.
Which is, I got the bakery so it isn't closed because I knew this would be a problem. So you can heat it up. But to maintain that, you know, as a constant is really difficult, because even, you know, in the summertime it can get cold here and wet.
And you would primarily, I guess, make yeasted breads rather than sourdough, which would probably be a more difficult creature to keep going.
Yeah, I think your environment plays a little bit more of a part, you know, unless you have pretty fancy equipment that you can, you know, enclose. But even like the proofers available over here, like the size of a refrigerator, and that, I just don't understand that. So I have a room, which, you know, I learned from Acme, they had this room, and you know, you can wheel your racks right in instead of this constant moving of trays into these small cabinets, which are several thousands of pounds, but don't really hold that much. And so here, you know, if you have a constant temperature, you can have your dough out in the bakeries, or you can have it, you know, where you can move it around. But it just, the weather here is, it could, you know, we can get all seasons in one day. It could be snowing and sunny and rainy and warm and cold all in one day. It's rather amazing. You sit there and watch it. And so I think with the soda breads, which are, you know, predominant over here, that was probably the easier way for the home baker, especially, you know, my husband grew up in a house, he's 59 now, without any kind of heating other than a fireplace.
Wow.
They had no refrigeration other than a pantry that had holes in it that went out to the outdoors. So, you know, that was a long time ago, but really it wasn't that long ago in Northern Ireland where, you know, they didn't have, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, I had growing up in California. You know, we take a lot of things for granted, but not to have refrigeration.
Sure.
You know, that, which wasn't that long ago, is kind of, you know, something we take for granted, and then not to have any kind of heat in your house and you huddle around a fireplace to keep you warm. Probably an effect on how, what was baked and how it was baked.
And how hard is it to be an expat? Do you sometimes miss California, or are you saying?
I miss California terribly.
Yeah.
Mostly weather, and you know, I would kill for a Meyer lemon and a fresh peach.
Yeah.
You don't get, our produce here is coming from all over the world. A lot of packaging, so it just doesn't have the flavor. You know, I was spoiled living in California, and, you know, after I left Berkeley, I moved to an agricultural area, which we grew everything there, and you had down the road, you know, you could get the freshest of the fresh, and so you get spoiled. So So I think the, you know, between the weather and the fresh produce, being able to grow things, you know, in my backyard, yeah, certainly I miss, but it's been a, you know, a great adventure being here, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, and, you know, it still continues. You know, we do have plans on going home eventually, but we thought we'd play this out and see, you know, see what happens.
And
we didn't want to leave too early.
And how's the transition been? I mean, how is it, how hard is it to become a an expat baker in, say, Northern Ireland?
Probably, you know, if you had a lot of money, it probably wouldn't be that hard. Uh-huh. But we started off in our house, which, you know, we would not have been able to do in California without a major remodel.
Yeah.
And as we made money at the markets, we moved into a small shop in Tandragee, which we were at for 3 years. Our retail part never really took off because, in their words, we baked just exotic things. And then this past Easter, we moved into, you know, our bigger facility, which will enable us to make more things and hire more people and, you know, get the office and everything out of the house. And working at the markets, you know, we did well enough that we were able to buy things as we went along. Sourcing ingredients is really difficult, but the actual setting up of the business, because of the political climate here, you know, they're really encouraging small businesses, actually was the easy part. You know, for any business, really, it was an easier part. It's the being used to using certain ingredients and certain equipment is what was the harder part, being in a different country and having to make your networks and find things. And most of the stuff I get does have to come from somewhere else.
And do you think the government's making an effort to try to change things, or is it really difficult because of the political situation?
As far as what small businesses go?
Small businesses, just basically everything.
There's things move really, really, really slow here.
Yeah.
And certain times of the year, the country pretty much shuts down. We're coming into July, which is marching. So pretty much everything kind of comes to a halt.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks, because they don't know about, like, rotating shifts or rotating holidays. I'm sorry, that person's off now. They all go, you know, at once. So things, you know, including hospitals,
yeah,
get pretty quiet.
Well, it's funny because my brother was in Israel many years ago with two Northern Irish guys, one Protestant, one Catholic. And he said they were like the best of friends. And they were picking like trees. I'm not sure what kind of fruit trees. And all of a sudden this like tank was running down the road. It was an Israeli tank. And my brother was just up in the tree, you know, paying no mind to it, and the both of them, they jumped into the bushes, and my brother goes, "What's wrong with you guys?" He goes, there's a tank, and my brother goes, "Jesus, you guys are fidgety." He goes, "Well, you would be too if you were from Northern Ireland," and my brother's like, "Oh, I guess so, you know."
So, yeah, well, there's parts that were untouched, and then there are parts, you know, that really suffered, you know, a lot of, you know, trauma, I think, because of what they saw, what, you
yeah.
know, kind of the atmosphere. When I first moved over, there was a lot of military vehicles, you know, and very large guns. And being from the Bay Area in San Francisco, I wasn't quite used to seeing, you know, people in military gear and,
sure.
and the large weapons, you know, in full view. And there are a lot of checkpoints.
Yeah.
And you don't see so much of that anymore. And, the forts are coming down. The army's gone. You don't hear as much of it. We did have a big issue with some, you know, trying to burn down Belfast again a few summers ago.
Oh, God.
And, you know, it was made you a little nervous, but, oh, God, here we go again. But it's some places were, you know, they were completely untouched. And
yeah.
and there are a lot of people from both communities that get along and don't see the point. But then there are a lot of them, too, that just can't move on. And that does make it difficult for business. You know, Belfast was shut down probably for over a week, or businesses had to close
uh-huh.
early in the day so they could get people out. We had a bomb scare in Tandragee, which made things kind of interesting. They cleared the whole town out except for the two Americans baking.
Oh, boy.
Which I'm like, I wonder what that's about.
Yeah,
it was an interesting day because I ran down. Our house was like 5 minutes away, and I ran down there to pick up Vince and came back, and already the town was, you know, roped off, and the police were everywhere. And you know, they let us in because, you know, they're kind of assuming it was a hoax, and it turned out to be, but the Army still had to come in and blow the thing up, and it did disrupt business. We had really no business that day because we were probably closed down from 4 a.m. till 10 a.m. that morning, and, you know, no one really could get in or out of town, and, you know, these poor people being woken up in the middle of the morning and having to be shifted up to the church so they would have somewhere to stay until they figured out what this was, you know, a small taste of what, you know, probably multiplied 30 times by that if you were living in Belfast or, you know, any of the major hot spots.
You should have brought the muffins around to the church.
They probably wouldn't, you know, they, for funny reason, they probably would be wanting sausage rolls or something else.
Yeah.
We did spread the muffins out quite a bit. We usually are pretty good about, you know, if we do have them, we give them away if they're not going to market or anything. But, it's been an interesting journey, and you certainly appreciate what you had back home, you know, a lot more, and see that we, in some ways, have it pretty easy, and we're pretty fortunate, you know, than even somewhere like Northern Ireland that is part of, you know, a larger country. You know, and it's something, you know, I think, you know, we all learn a lot of, you know, and they've turned it around, and hopefully they'll continue to turn it around.
So do you think it'll ever become part of Ireland proper?
Can I no comment on that?
Oh, okay.
I'm still living. I'm still living in an area where people kind of get offended by things like that.
Okay.
And
sorry.
You know, yes, you know, I would like to see everybody get what they want and what's going to work best for all the people here and what that will be. You know, it's really hard to say.
Well, hopefully that'll help the baking business, because it seems a kind of a strange thing not to have good bread being sold everywhere.
You know, wheaten bread, I think, certainly has its place, and it is quite tasty on its own. It's not something I would probably eat every day. And you do see there are a couple of bakeries down in the Republic that are really working hard at putting out, you know, Harsh style or crusty loafed breads.
Sure.
Not everyone's buying into it yet, you know, but it's changing. It's changing so fast. It's quite amazing how quickly things are actually moving. You know, it's just kind of unusual because we're so close to the rest of Europe that you would think it would have already, you know, had an impact here. But, you know, things move fast, but then people are also slow to change some of their traditional ways. And,
sure.
You know, not that they need to or that's bad, but it's certainly nice to have variety.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's coming. The borders are getting blurred. You know, I think if we ever lost the, you know, or if Northern Ireland bought into the euro or the United Kingdom bought into the euro, it would really blur, you know, the boundaries even more. You know, we work in two currencies here and two different countries with regulations, two different countries that want my taxes. And, and you know, that makes it a little...
Well, so you're taxed twice then?
Pardon me? Well, I'm not taxed, but I do, as far as like sales tax or what they call VAT, I have to be registered in both. Countries, as far as, you know, I was like going, well, do I have to pay them, you know, the regular tax too? But apparently no, because of the businesses, we're actually smack dab on the border. I could walk across the street and be in the Republic, so it makes life very interesting to be sure. But there was a time when people didn't really travel between the two countries very much.
Wow.
You know, some because it was dangerous, some, you know, of imaginary fears, I think, and stubbornness. But right now there's a road being built. The new freeway goes from Dublin and is almost all the way to Belfast, so that's encouraging and will make a huge difference, I think, as far as trade goes. It's, you know, there was a time when we drove to Dublin, we had to drive through every little village to get there, and it would take forever. Now we have a major two-lane, you know, freeway that, you know, will connect Dublin and Belfast, and they're almost all the way through, so that should make a huge impact on the amount of business, you know, that goes back and forth.
So your shift, I guess, is ended for the day, but you'll be back again there tonight, I guess, right?
My shift had ended about 7 a.m. this morning. I took a quick nap, and I'll be back in there, you know, after we end the phone call. I just was finishing up on the paperwork. So it's sort of never ending at the moment. You know, it's not a great position to be in, but it's not a bad one either.
And how hard is it to get, like, students or in the culinary field over there?
There are some, and I was going to, you know, look in the Northern Irish, you know, area. A lot of it is people don't drive a lot, you know, as much as we do in the States. Not everybody has license, so that's an issue, especially with students.
Yeah.
you know, they may wait a while to get their license. So because we're kind of in the middle of nowhere,
it's a harder drive.
It makes it a little harder. We're also in an area, because we're in a border area, we're in an area that is not so well known as being a place you want to be.
Yeah.
It's a lovely, beautiful area, but because it's a border area, it has a history. And a reputation. So I'm not sure if that plays a part or not. There is a baking institute in Dublin that I've got, you know, job notices posted, and there are different community colleges, but it's a different way of doing things. So it's, you know, so I'm looking, you know, not necessarily for skills, but for passion. And I thought I had somebody, but never heard back from him. And, you know, it could have been probably the drive down. Or he maybe thought twice about working for the crazy American lady.
Well, maybe you'll have to start a little town around your bakeries and get people to move in.
Well, yeah, it's actually growing. It's actually, you know, there's a lot of nice big houses here. It's you know, it's sparse, but there is, with the freeway coming through now, really a big, huge potential for it actually to become a pretty major area.
Sure.
You know, there is a larger city right up the road. It's just trying to find the right people. Most bakers these days are actually Polish. You know, a lot of the Polish are taking over a lot of the baking jobs in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland.
And in England, too, I think, as well.
Yeah, and, you know, the guy I interviewed was actually Northern Irish, and I thought, well, there's one for the Irish. But, you know, that's kind of the problem. You know, you have to actually show up if you want the job.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are people who, you know, because of the European Union, the countries that have entered, they have been flocking, especially to the Republic, for work because of the opportunity. But it's slowed down quite a bit. So I'm not sure if they're coming, you know, as quickly as they once did.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can find you somebody on Stir the Pots. Maybe somebody will call you.
Someone wants, you know, we've had people from Mexico, Germany, Italy, but they're all, you know, kind of looking for free flights. Unfortunately, I'm not that big to pay for someone's living expenses and flights in. But, yeah, if someone can get themselves into Ireland and they're looking for work, certainly give us a call.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of potential here and a lot of potential for getting, you know, attention, because you really are on the edge of what is a really fast-changing food scene. You know, and then in Northern Ireland, they haven't even begun, and, you know, but you can see different things happening up there, especially in the Belfast area, that you can see that for anyone serious about food and, you know, tired of competing with, you know, everybody else, say if you're in Berkeley, you know, there's everything so good there.
Yeah.
It's hard to make your own mark in the world that, you know, certainly there's stuff going on here that you would certainly be a star.
Right. Wish the best for you, and thanks for getting in touch with me. I seem to be finding more people on the web now than ever, so.
Well, yeah, just because of where I am, I spend a lot of time on it, and I love computers, and, you know, just it's been a great way to really bring communities together and for me to, you know, resource things and for me to send things from California. So expensive, and I thought, oh, Jeremy's in New York, you know. Let's call him. And it actually has been a big help. And you know, the Dan Lepard site has actually been a big help for, you know, sourcing things and finding people to give me ideas of where I can go. You know, I can't even find a wooden, you know, workbench here, which just drives me crazy because I'm dying to have one. So I may have to resort in getting one over from the East Coast. But here, they no one uses them, and I don't understand it. You know, the health department doesn't like it, but...
Yeah.
You know, they really can't find any proof that a bread bakery is going to harm anyone because they're using a wooden workbench.
Yeah,
so.
I know. I think, like, even, like, bread baskets are, like, a no-no with the linen cloths here in the States. So.
Yeah, you know, and they need to take care of them. But, you know, I'm sorry. I think somebody, you know, we're the craft industry is being, you know, going to be damaged by a lot of the regulations that are coming in. And,
yeah.
And what people can use. You know, I heard in England that they're taking away the wooden rolling pins with, you know, giving them plastic. And, you know, for me, that it doesn't sit right, at, you know, because I just, it's not why I bake.
Yeah, and who needs
you know,
all that plastic and...
Yeah, well, yeah, and just, you know, the aesthetic is wrong, the feel is wrong, and, you know, it's like a workman's tools. You can't mess with them, and you know, if people just do the right thing, there
yeah,
isn't a
they
problem.
Shape, they conform and shape to your hands and everything. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You know, any like wooden bench knives are hard to find, and I have this plastic one. And it's horrible. It's too heavy.
Yeah,
it's not balanced. And... So you gave me that site where they had wooden dough knives. I'm like, yay! I'm gonna order 10 before they disappear.
Yeah.
You know, and I still use a wooden rolling pin, and you know, I'm waiting for them to take it away from me, but hopefully they won't.
Oh, you just hide it, and when they
yeah, hide all the wooden. But I am still gonna, you know, challenge them on the wooden workbench, because there have been studies, and there isn't much proof that they're any more dangerous than plastic or you know anything else. So anyway.
All right.
I appreciate the work you're doing, and I've enjoyed the interview, so thank you so much for providing not only entertainment, but a good service to the bread and the food communities.
And thank you.
Okay,
and
no
thanks
problem.
Thanks for the mixes. I got to start making some now that I...
Yeah.
Even
a little,
though it's like 8 million degrees over here, so...
Well, it's just soda bread. It shouldn't
yeah.
be too traumatic. It only bakes in about 30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
but yeah, enjoy a wee bit of the Irish there, and thank you so much for giving us a call. And if you're in Ireland, certainly stop by.
I will.
And, you know, I'm looking for a baker if you want to ever switch sides.
Yeah,
so
I might.
Just let me know.
New York can be a bit tedious after a while, you know?
Well, that's it. You know, I mean, I love California, but it has been nice to see other parts of the world. So sometimes I think that's a good thing, you know, get out and see what the rest of the world's doing.
Yeah.
But anyway, have a good weekend.
Great, thanks.
Thanks
and,
for the call.
Don't work too hard.
Oh, I won't.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.